welcome everyone to the Screencast episode. I don't give a fuck.
Whoa!
What episode are we on? Hold on. We're gonna redo it.
I actually kind of like that it's the
intro. Yeah, let's keep it.
No, we're gonna keep it? Okay. I was hoping my browser would load by the time I said it.
Well, just
that's okay. We're already in. Who cares? Everyone likes it when we fuck up every now and then. Episode 77. That's where we're at.
Now and then?
There you go.
I don't know, now and then. Who cares? That's the
Now and then with like Demi Moore and Rosie O'Donnell?
Prefer now and laters because they are tart yet tangy.
And they get stuck in the roof of your mouth. You ever had that happen?
Yes, and that's the best part.
Panic attack. All right. But eventually, if you wait long enough, it'll dissolve, but... A little bit. I don't know if I like that. Then again, I wore a retainer when I was younger, so maybe it brings back flashbacks.
There we go.
Did you have some like traumatic experience with a retainer? Because I had a retainer as well, but I can eat candy just fine.
I've had many dreams of my teeth falling out. So
that's
me and
terrifying.
Teeth are weird. You'll know if you listen to the first few episodes. I mentioned teeth quite a bit.
Yeah.
It must
well,
be
you
some...
have good teeth, so...
Yeah, I made a joke about that because...
But I'm terrified of the dentist.
The first, like, there's two things that Sean used to do in the beginning of this and when we started. He always used to mention deaths of everybody. Like, oh, they're dead. And then he would also mention teeth. It was the weirdest fucking thing.
Mm-hmm. Are you just really into vagina dentata? Is that your big secret?
Yes, exactly. It's another gigantic fear of mine.
Well, that's a really strange fear to have because it's not a real thing. That'd be like saying, I'm really scared of the creepy monsters in Stephen King's The Mist. Like, well, that's a weird thing to be afraid of because it's not real.
And they're obviously CGI.
Oh, here
well,
we
I'm
go.
I'm terrified of CGI. So.
Here we go. It's CGI.
The Mist is one of my favorite movies. All right, welcome everyone. Sorry, Jesus Christ. It's been a while since we've talked. Sorry about missing last week. Schedules are ridiculous.
Might
and,
be.
You know, it happens. But we gave you 2 in 1 week, so chill out. So today, we are talking about Astron 6's The Editor.
We also have
a couple movies in our segments that I will keep on the down low for now, unless you've read the paragraph introducing the podcast. Shit. But we'll be getting to those in just a second. But first, we got to figure out what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow. I almost forgot.
We'll get the door. Pizza.
The grunting I was talking about.
That's not even grunting. A grunt.
I don't know
it was
what
a yawn.
It is. Is that a yawn?
That doesn't even sound like a yawn. That sounds like a moan. That sounds like weird zombie moan.
Yeah.
Like every eighth grader trying to be funny being a zombie moan. That's what mm-hmm. that sounded like.
Speaking of zombies, my brother got to be a zombie. He worked for Sonic Corporation, you know, the hamburgers. And they, I guess, have spots during The Walking Dead, and they had a couple of the Walking Dead makeup artists come out and make him and his team up as zombies.
I'm so jealous that not only does he get to be a zombie, but he also gets those sweet-ass happy hour deals. Sonic is tits awesome. Oh, jealous.
They're all in wearing rundown tits. Sonic outfits, and they look great.
That's outstanding.
Anyway, I was a little bit jealous of him. Even though I don't like The Walking Dead, I respect their makeup.
Yeah, their makeup's good.
BJ, you were about to start what's on your doorstep.
All right, so my doorstep is going to be really cool for the next couple of weeks because my TV decided to explode in a blaze of glory.
Wait, when you like legit like blew up?
Yeah, the back of it kind of blew up a little bit.
Wow.
So that's fun.
Tube TV or HD TV?
HD.
Really?
Yeah.
Plasma?
I didn't know that was a thing that could happen.
Wow.
Apparently it is. Because it just turned off and we were messing with it and we're like, oh, I don't see anything wrong with it. This is strange. And then today I was messing with it to try to find it and like the whole bottom of it was like imploded.
Hmm.
It's like, oh, that's a fun thing to have
discovered. A little bit of a fire hazard.
A little bit. It's unplugged. It's fine. So I'll be getting a new TV when I'm not super poor, but I don't know if you all follow me on Instagram, but my ceiling in my office is falling apart. I'm currently without a vehicle for the next couple of days. My life is in shambles. It's fine.
If you want to, like, if you'd like to start, all right, that's it. We're going to start up a GoFundMe for BJ.
Let's not do that, because I didn't even do that when I had cancer. I was like, let's not do that. And then someone did it for me, and I was like riddled with anxiety about it the whole day. But anyway, my doorstep is going to be interesting when I get a new TV, because Zach and I were gifted by the incredible Brandon Salkill. You might know him as he's kind of the main male actor for all of Dustin Mills' films. He willed us over 400 VHS tapes.
Oof.
And there are some pretty awesome things in it that I've never even heard of, and that's why I can't give you titles. But there's going to be a ton of crazy shit, a lot of stuff I have never seen before, just given the fact that I'm so young. A lot of the shit I just haven't seen in years. So I'm going to be going through all of that. So my What's on Your Doorstep is going to be pretty sweet once, you know, the television is alive again. But I did manage to sneak out and catch a screening of M. Night Shyamalan's The Visit. And I'm not gonna lie,
I had
a fucking blast.
Really?
It is so freaking funny. Like, okay, the one thing I will say is that the way that it's being advertised, that's not the film you're gonna get.
It's not a first person.
No, it is still that. Like,
so she's doing like a documentary, yes. Right? Of,
yes.
Okay.
That's cool. She's still doing that. The documentary. Mm-hmm. But the two kids are fucking fantastic. And I recently did this big post over at Halloween Love about how M. Night Shyamalan is not good at a lot of things, but the man can direct the shit out of some kid actors. Like, when you really think about it, even films like The Last Airbender, which are terrible, the kids are all great. And that's...
Except for Slumdog Millionaire trying to play a villain.
Well, that's just miscasting. There's a difference there. But like, you look back...
Bet you won't hit her.
But like, you look back at... like, you know, obviously Haley Joel Osment was nominated for an Oscar in The Sixth Sense. Abigail Breslin's first movie is in Signs. And the scene where like Mel Gibson's yelling at her and she's crying. Yeah. Oh my God, it's fantastic. Brilliant. And these kids are like, you know, M. Night's one of the few directors that are willing to let kids kind of hold an entire film together. And these kids, they're so like unlikable, but at the same time, like, I completely understand why they were chosen, because they're so accurate of representing what fucking asshole kids today actually act like. And I loved that. But yeah, it's super funny. There's a lot of really messed up shit that goes on in it. And it's just, I was laughing my ass off. The jump scares are effective, but it's very, very, it's a weird kind of balance between the two, because the scary stuff is pretty paint by numbers in regard to like found footage kind of films, but the comedy is so like almost slapsticky in a way, which to me just kind of encourages, reinforces my idea that The Happening is like one big fucking joke that none of us were in on. Like, after I watched The Visit, I was like, that's it. I was right this whole time. M. Night Shyamalan is a goddamn troll. He knows what he's doing, and we're all just stupid and not in on the joke.
The plant's trying to kill us?
You're the worst Mark Wahlberg. You are the worst Mark Wahlberg.
He's the best Mark Wahlberg. What are you talking about?
There's like a breeze going on outside. I don't understand what's going on.
You're so bad. I need to find you a video that you need to put in the show notes of Mark Wahlberg as Iron Man.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. It's so funny. It's just him walking around like, Jarvis, what's up with your fucking accent? Like, it's so good. Ugh. It's so good.
You're the worst Mark Wahlberg guy for that.
I'm way terrible. I never claimed to be good at it. But no, I thought The Visit was a blast. I had a lot of fun with it. I get why people aren't going to like it. But yeah, if you think you're going into it with sort of like a Taking of Deborah Logan scary old lady film, you are mistaken. That's not what you're getting. So just go in with low expectations and not really know what to expect, and you'll enjoy it. Come in with preconceived notions about it. You're going to be upset.
For a long time, I feel like I was a defender, an M. Night Shyamalan, you know, defender or apologist
you
or whatever.
Would be.
Well, no, I liked most of his movies up till The Village, and then The Happening happened. Ugh, bad.
See, I'll defend The Happening all day, every day.
I started watching it. I never finished it. It was Lady in the Water. That was before, right? It was like diminishing returns for me. And then I tried watching his god awful Will Smith sci-fi movie, and that was even just horrible. And
After Earth.
After Earth. But I've always kind of been pulling for him because you know that he's capable of doing great things.
Right.
But I feel like, I don't know if it was just kind of the budgets or him, you know, trying. I think maybe he needed a humbling period, maybe. I don't know. But I've been hearing a lot of great things about The Visit, so.
I don't know. I had fun with it. Cool, I know some people who fucking hated it. Uh-huh. And that's cool. They're entitled to that opinion. But I had fun, and you hating it didn't make me have any less fun.
Right.
Yeah. And that was what was on my doorstep, because I didn't do shit. I'm in a show right now. I have no time for life.
Yeah, I didn't hate The Visit at all. I had a lot of fun with it. Willow was like in tears half the time, laughing so hard throughout the film. So it's a fun movie to take. You know, if your kids are into that sort of thing, it's fun to take them, because Willow had a blast.
Oh, that's cool.
As
what
for me,
did Willow think of T. Diamond Stylus?
She just cracked up every time he was like, every time he was even open his mouth, she would just start to giggle.
That kid is so brilliant. I just want to cast him in everything. Like, he's
yeah,
so funny.
Yeah, I
want to
know
funny.
Like if he's improvising a lot of those lyrics, or if he like studied a script that Ed wrote. Because either way, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, because it's not a spoiler or anything, but the little white boy, he raps in it a lot.
Yeah,
and like that's pretty great. And then he's got this like trying not to be a misogynist, so instead of saying bitches and hoes or swearing, he just yells out like pop singer names. So like it's kind of taking that like Kelly Clarkson joke from 40-Year-Old Virgin, but like just letting it keep going.
That's fantastic.
So he's like, yeah, like I'll hit my foot and be like, oh, Shakira. I fucking couldn't stop laughing. Like I was choking on whatever I was eating, probably Reese's Pieces, let's be real.
Of course.
I was like, God, that's so stupid and so funny. And I thought it was going to be just like a one-time thing. And then it kept fucking happening. And I was like, you know what? You're committing. I like it. I will take this commitment.
That's awesome. You know whose name is awesome to replace for swear words is Benedict Cumberbatch. That happens a lot in my house.
Buttersnatch. Cabbage?
No, it's great. You go, Benedict Cumberbatch! See? Replaces goddamn it quite nicely.
I like to yell, like, the What the French Toast from that Orbit video, Orbit's commercial, about cleaning up dirty mouths. I'm like, oh, What the French Toast? Okay. Anyway, Brad, I interrupted you because I'm hyper.
No. It was fun. No, I the one experience that I really did love in The Visit was in the theater. We were sitting there, and towards the end of the film, you know, no spoilers here, of course. There's a sequence that is pretty gross. For most people, they will just go, ew. I literally had someone throw up behind me, like puke everywhere. Like it happened, and Willow is like, ew. Like that, and she does her, ew, when she doesn't like anything, and all I hear is, bleh! And I'm like, oh my, I like look over, and the woman's like, hovered over, and I just hear like the splashing hitting the floor, and I'm like, oh my god, she threw up because of that scene. How amazing is that?
And you wow.
It was far.
I almost
far,
threw
was
up. I
away.
Won't lie. It happened, and I felt the gag yeah. happen, and I was like, oh, okay, no, it's a movie.
Yeah, it's, wow. It's more or less, I was just laughing when it happened. Willow's going, ooh, and then someone, like, two rows behind me is throwing up, like, on their lap. And I'm like, holy shit, this is fucking great. But other than that, I mean, I had a lot of fun with the movie. It's really funny. It has some, you know, it has some generally, like, creepy moments. It has, you know, some funny moments that are trying to be creepy but just end up being kind of funny. The only thing, my only beef with the movie, I don't know if M. Night's name was attached to it, I don't know if I would have figured it out as quickly, or if he's just really bad at doing his twist now, because it wasn't fun for me, because about 30 minutes into the movie, I'm like, oh shit, this is what's happening. It's just way too obvious.
And yeah, I had the same issue.
I was like, okay, like if that's it, then that's kind of cool. It would be cool for the reveal if they do reveal it. But then I was like, good thing that the kids were so great, because that movie could have been really boring, because you're waiting an hour for this to happen, to understand like what's going on.
And there needed to be way more Catherine Hahn in that, because she is brilliant,
yeah,
and I
she
need
was
her
great.
In more things.
Yeah,
she was so fun and so cute, and I was like, man, they are resorting her to a Skype thing. But that is one thing that I really enjoyed, is that their integration of technology was just enough where I'm like, okay, yeah, this is a modern piece without it being unfriended.
Yeah. So
I enjoyed it.
Overall, I think if anybody enjoys found footage movies, I think that you'll thoroughly enjoy it. If you enjoy M. Night movies, like a lot of M. Night movies, then I think you will enjoy it. I think people that hate found footage and hate M. Night Shyamalan are the people that are really tearing this one apart. Because I'll be honest, like I really like found footage movies, but I gave up on M. Night Shyamalan after Signs, because I fucking couldn't take Signs. I thought that was boring. Yeah, I thought it was boring. It was just really silly. I know that I'm in the minority on that one for sure, but I just can't do it. But he did win me over a little bit after I rewatched Lady in the Water. But I think if I was like 12, that would have been my favorite movie of all time, because it's very much a fairy tale story for children. But everything else, like The Village, and you know, I mean, I love Sixth Sense and Unbreakable, and I like Stuart Little, so Stuart Little's really funny.
Well, and that's the other thing that I was thinking about when I was watching The Visit, is that I would consider The Visit very much like a transitionary horror film, something that is used to bridge the gap between, you know, like Paranorman and something a little bit more intense. Like, that's a really good balance. Like how Gremlins is a good balance between kind of those two worlds. And the more I think about it, pretty much all of his films are that way. And I know that when he first started, everyone was calling him, like, oh, he's the new Spielberg or whatever. And I think in that regard, the one thing about Spielberg that he does kind of capture is that he's really good at making these films that are meant kind of for that transitionary audience. Like, Signs, yeah, it's a little stupid for adults, but, you know, I saw Signs and I was, I don't know, maybe out of elementary school, I would have been like 10 or 11. It scared the fucking hell out of me. Like, I was horrified of that movie. My little cousin watched it with me, and she was, I think, 7 or 8 at the time. She still has nightmares about that film. So as much as people want to hate on him, I don't think obviously he can capture, whereas like Spielberg, his films, you know, were great for kids, but also great for adults. I don't think Shyamalan has been able to figure out that balance. But as far as making films that are pretty good for kids, he's done that very well. So I can't really take that away from him. I think he's a misunderstood filmmaker, because he's not making films for us. He's making films for Willow, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
I can dig it.
So that was my doorstep. What's on yours?
All right. Well, I got around to watching Mill Creek's release of Space Invaders. I haven't seen this. I thought this was Strange Invaders. I got them confused. But this, Space Invaders it's a movie. A bunch of aliens come to town because Earth is playing an Orson Welles War of the Worlds recording. And they think that they're going to go fight, and they're just a bunch of idiots. And, it's just, like, I think this is one of those movies that you have to see when you're a kid.
Totally.
Yeah, and kind of grow up with it, because as an adult watching it the first time, it wasn't charming, it wasn't funny, Aliens are, you know, for being, I don't know, maybe lower budget, because this, I don't think this is a big budget movie. The aliens look kind of cool, like, you know, for the most part, for being in the 80s. And the drone thing that kind of controls them is pretty sweet too. But other than that, it's not a very good movie. And also, I don't understand what the fucking Mill Creek's doing with Blu-rays, putting these trans, because it's just really, it's so, it looks like a tape is what it looks like. It looks like a VHS tape, the transfer.
Oh, really?
Very sloppy. Yeah, it's very, that's very, very, very
someone's,
sloppy.
Someone's HD master that they just got.
That's not that's a DVD master.
DVD master? They basically put some master to Blu-ray. Yeah, I've been meaning to. I got it. It was super cheap, so I got this to watch with my kids. I saw this thing.
Most of the good thing about them.
Yeah, I saw this in the theater opening weekend. But I remember, I remember this was one of those films where I noticed that trailers were still must have been edited before the movie was done, because all the jokes that were in the trailer and certain things that happened, like, did not make it to the movie itself. And I remember coming out of the theater going, "Well, what about this part? And it was in the trailer and it was funny," and you know. So that the trailer is way different than the flick itself.
Yeah,
I kind of wish that would make a comeback, because
it's surprising. Like, I always like that surprise.
Yeah, the idea of trailers showing things that may not necessarily be in the film, because you know a lot of the special features that are on, you know, DVDs or whatever, and the deleted scenes are great and funny, but a lot of the times, like. Especially with comedy films or horror films, you get the good jokes and the good scares in the trailer, and then that leaves nothing for the film.
Right.
But if you were to show these, you know, funny jokes or good scares that, you know, didn't necessarily make it that are in the deleted scenes, I mean, you're going to still draw people into the theater, and then they're still going to be satisfied with the final product because it wasn't spoiled for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like it and I don't like it. It just depends. Like, I'm with Sean because, like, you're waiting for it to happen. But when it doesn't happen, it's kind of a surprise. Because, you know, every now and then, now and again, I'll watch a trailer and, you know, hour and 30 minutes in the movie, I'm like, oh, man, I remember that scene. That's gonna happen at the end. And then you kind of get the place. It's almost like you can place the events that are going to happen in the movie by watching the trailer. Yeah. It kind of ruins it. You know, that's the reason why I try to stay away from so much as possible. But
yeah,
one thing that I wish that would make a comeback, and one thing I did like about the film, and I don't know how many people pay attention to this, but in the 80s, there were a lot of films that had these songs done for the movie itself.
Yes.
And there was like, they didn't have to be by like a known band. It was like sometimes like the director and like, you know, some of the cast members getting together and doing a specific song. And it happens in this because I was looking it up, and originally this movie was titled Martians. Well, they actually have a song at the end called Martians, and they're singing about the film. And that happens, you know, not very often, but it happens often enough to stick in your mind. And I always thought that was kind of a fun aspect to films.
Yeah, Monster Squad does that. Yeah, I remember
Monster Squad does it. Yeah,
taking so a tape recorder. Fright Night. I remember taping the Monster Squad song off the end credits with a little tape recorder.
Yeah, the Fright Night end credit song is on like my running mix for the gym.
Nice.
So, but yeah, I wish they would sometimes bring that back. Anyways, if you're a fan of the film, it's out, it's cheap, enjoy it. If you haven't seen it, I can't really recommend it.
Would you recommend, I mean, it's out on DVD still, right? Or still a DVD? Or is this the first kind of, like, widescreen transfer of it? Which, that could be the case, actually.
I'm not 100% sure. I mean, it's cheap enough that it doesn't really matter if you buy a DVD or Blu-ray. Second, I spent a little bit more time on than usual, but Severin released Turkey Shoot, which is also known as Escape 2000.
Yes.
Which is probably one of my favorite apocalyptic fucking craziness movies that Brian...
I have not seen this, so I'm really excited to hear about it.
Yeah. It's on my pile.
Turkey Shoot is... It stars Steve Railsback, who is amazing in everything he does, and Olivia Hussey, who really didn't do a lot of films after this. I mean, she was in Black Christmas and stuff like that, but she didn't pop up as I thought she would, because she's just a beautiful woman. But
yeah,
and she's a good actress too. But anyways, this is set in the future. A bunch of people are basically set into this compound for being deviants. You can be a deviant for any kind of sort of reason. It's the future, and then you have it's like a behavioral thing, methods that they you know, go after you with. So this movie's known as Escape 2000. It's known as, I was trying to think of the other titles that it's known as. It's like Thatcher's, like Camp, I think, was another one. But yeah, Severin did a Blu-ray of this. It was originally, I think, Anchor Bay that did a DVD, and that's long out of print. So it was kind of fun to see this back. They have, you know, the Osprey Station special features on here. They have a featurette with some of the actors that are still alive. They have a Brian Trenchard Smith interview, which is great. They have the Not Quite Hollywood stuff pulled all over,
Did they put the actual whole documentary on there? Or just
no? It's just longer interviews. And stuff.
Okay, that'd be amazing if they just threw that Not Quite Hollywood on here.
But anyway, Blood Camp Thatcher is what it was called. Anyways, but yeah, it's a really fun movie. It's really gory. It's got some, you know, if you're a fan of like movies like No Escape, which I always bring up, it's very much like a toned down version of that, of course. But it's just really bloody and gritty and dirty. And Brian Trenchard Smith can take $100 basically and make $1 million movie. That's the type of person he is. If you're not familiar with any of his work, I mean, people have always know who he is after you say a few titles, because he, you know, did Night of the Demons 2, he did BMX Bandits, he did The Go Kids, which is also known as Frog Dreaming for all the kids that love the, you know, Monster Squad and stuff like that. You know, he did a movie kind of like that. But yeah, Day of the Panther, he did a few of the Leprechaun movies. But anyways, he's a hell of a filmmaker, and Tarantino loves him as well. Of course, you know, the Getting Ready montage and, you know, From Dusk Till Dawn is directly pulled from Night of the Demons 2 when they're prepping to fight the demons and shit, which is always fun. But definitely a something worth to pick up. I think it's $17.99 on Amazon right now. But a hell of a transfer. It's uncut this time, which is kind of a thing that people have been wanting, just because it does get really gory. There is a machine gun scene where someone gets blown the fuck up, and it is amazing. And
I am definitely tracking this down.
Yeah, it is so brutal when it happens. Like, it's one of those things that wherever you would be with you're with the audience, like at your house or in a theater, when that scene happens, that's the eruption scene where everybody just starts screaming and clapping, because it is fucking amazing. Which looks so good in HD. But anyways, Steve Rail's back, Olivia Hussey, great, great movie. Glad to see it out. They actually just did a remake of this that is so underseen. I don't know, like, the reason why it was shoved under the rug, but they remade Turkey Shoot. It has John Hewitt directed it, who is the director of Acolytes and Night of Revenge. In a movie called Red Ball. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it has Dominic Purcell in it. And it's more or less geared. It's not the greatest movie, but
it looks like a straight to video type.
Well, it was, but it's more or less reality TV oriented rather than just people. Like Turkey Shoot is, I've always known Escape 2000. So I'm starting to stumble over saying Turkey Shoot. But Turkey Shoot, the original, is more or less just dealing with these people and them trying to survive because they're so-called deviants, but it's an unfair world to be called a deviant. The same thing is like an Escape from LA. People are being thrown into this compound for just being normal that doesn't want to follow your rules. Like, they're not murderers and rapists and shit like that. You know, they just don't follow. They're thrown in it. So anything can kind of classify you as deviants, but the people that run the camp are the murderous rapists. So it's kind of fun to see the overthrow of power like this. And it's just a really bizarre movie at times, too. I forgot to mention that. There's just so much weird shit. There is a character in this movie that you do not understand why they are how they are and why it exists. Because it's just a normal movie. And it's very much like Big Trouble in Little China. However, like, there's that feeling of, like, sorcerers and stuff, but then when the big hairy monster shows up, you're like, what the fuck? Like, where's that coming from? This has that.
Nice.
It's really awesome. Really bizarre. But anyways, buy it, love it, and then if you're not familiar with Brian Trenchard-Smith, pick up all his movies, because I'm not a huge fan of everything he's done, but I'm a fan of what he can do. He's a hell of a filmmaker. He knows how to churn it out and make Hollywood movies with no budget. So anyways, moving along. Finally,
so the Turkey Shoot remake, was it called an Elimination Game, or do they keep?
No, it's called Turkey Shoot.
It's called Elimination Game somewhere. It comes up as an alternate title. Anyway.
Oh, sorry,
never
Sean.
Mind. I'm just looking it up.
Anyways, it's not very good, but I do like John Hewitt. If you want to watch some really, really good movies, watch his two previous films called Acolytes. Acolytes is probably one of my favorite films of all time. It's about these kids that find out their neighbor is a serial killer, so they blackmail him.
Nice.
It is fucking intense as fuck.
That's pretty amazing.
That's ballsy.
Yeah, no, it's a really, really good movie. And Joel Egerton is the serial killer, so that should tell you
something. So in.
Yeah, it is something to fucking see, because you're like, holy shit, these kids are so ballsy. And then it develops how you think it's going to develop, and it's just so good. And then his other film, it's really, really good. It's called X. Probably familiar with a woman bending over and her legs crossed that forms an X. Really, really fucking good. It's about basically two prostitutes that are who see a murder of a cop, and then they are chased one night when all this shit is going down. It's really fucking good, and it's very intense. So, anyways, moving along, John Hewitt's awesome. Finally, the unrated producer's cut standalone disc came out from Miramax Lionsgate. Not an Echo Bridge Blu-ray, so there you go, people.
It's still the transfer that Scream Factory basically funded, right?
Yeah, it's just the transfer of Scream Factory, which, you know, if you don't own the box set, here you go. This is the reason why you don't need to own it anymore.
I shouldn't have bought that damn box set. I mean,
yeah,
because I had them all on Blu-ray already, and then I bought the box set for this, and now for $5, everyone can get the producer's cut.
Yeah, I held off on the box set because
yeah, I didn't buy it either because I knew it was coming.
So stupid. Are you guys there?
Yeah, hey. I'm here.
Brad?
Sean?
There you go.
I'm still here.
Okay, you just got quiet all of a sudden.
Oh. But, yeah, I mean, I had it, and I had part 6 on Blu-ray. All I was missing was those, you know, few little scenes and kind of a different cut.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that big of a deal. I've seen it. So I held off, and boom, this renders the box set useless at this point, because that's the only selling point, was that unless you're a collector and you want everything to be concise and beautiful, I guess. But, yeah, this is your reason to get rid of, the old Blu-ray, and yeah, I mean, it's a completely different movie.
Yeah, you can now sell that box set for like, what, $100, and then take $30 of that and buy all the Halloween movies.
Yeah, because they're super fucking cheap.
Get the Canadian Blu-ray of 4, 5, and 6 or whatever.
Yeah, it's the same transfer as a Scream, so don't get like super excited. There's nothing new. It does have an HD digital code, but for the most part, if you haven't seen Halloween 6, I suggest, if you don't like Halloween 6, I suggest watching this because it's a lot better. It really is. It is a lot better. Aside from the soundtrack, that's kind of a metal. It's like a heavy metal Michael Myers theme. It's really bizarre. Here we go. This was a movie. Run, Hide, Die. It is about a group of females that go out in the woods and come across a savage killer. Woo! It's not misogynistic, which I thought it was going to be, mainly because it's written by a lady. So it doesn't go into like, hey, look, there's girls, let's rape them and then torture them and kill them. No, it's not. It's mostly them running for their life the whole entire time. And, you know, it's kind of a surprise towards the end what's going on. But really awful dialogue. But not bad enough to say no to. I can say that. There's definitely some moments the actresses are fun. And it's an all-female cast, of course. They are fun, and the chemistry between them works. It was just the script wasn't as great as it could and should have been, because the girls are actually decent actresses. They just weren't really working with a whole lot.
What was that movie called?
Run, Hide, Die. It was made like in 2012, and finally...
I was just going to ask what the year was.
So, but anyways.
What kind of budget do you think they were working with? Like, is this like crazy low budget, or is this like moderate?
I would say around the 20,000 mark, 10 to 20.
Is this the one with that same girl on the cover poster?
You gotta talk
about that, man.
Well, it was actually because of this movie, because I looked up the poster. Because I was looking for this poster, because then on the DVD, it's big red letters, Run, Hide, Die, with this, like, killer that's not in the movie with an axe standing there. And I was like, oh, so I, like, looked it up, and I saw that crawling girl, and I was like, man, I see it a lot. So I just started, like, looking shit up, and I was like, good Lord, there's so many crawling girls walking away from killers. Like, what the hell's going on? I only found one dude. Only one dude crawling.
I think it goes to the Redbox Netflix like algorithm on like what people are going to click on.
Right.
And I guess that's an image that for a hot minute, everybody was watching films that look like that. So then anybody who made a film that wasn't like backed by some big studio ended up with that cover.
With the same girl, right? Wasn't there four or five with the same exact girl?
There's that one. And then there's the, I always know it as the girl that's in the Baseline Killer ad, where it's like the girl with like big eyes and there's a man's hand over her mouth. That's the other like frequently used horror film.
Well, it was like I think it's Absentia. Is the girl that is like on three or four different, but it's like literally the same image of the
same
girl.
One. It's like
and
yeah,
it's ridiculous. So speaking of. Misogynistic films.
Oh boy.
I have one here.
Here we go.
This is the one by Mondo Macabre that had a few DVDs released recently. This one is a little bit different because it was so underseen and really, really, really hard to find. And when you
What's
did find
title?
It, it's called The Wife Killer. It's just a really tough movie to find.
Wait, a movie called The Wife Killer is misogynist? You don't fucking say.
Well, it's... Yeah. So anyways, even if you do find it, it was kind of hard to find it uncut, and this is what this is. So they put this together the best they could because most of the elements have been destroyed, so they pieced a couple things together. Some of the scenes are in like different languages, some have different subtitles, just because to try to get the complete movie in its entirety, they had to do some crazy shit. So finally they got it together, released it on DVD. It's a really brutal giallo film. If you're into this sort of thing, maybe, but if you're not, it's kind of tough to watch because it is very rapey, and, you know, the killer makes all the women do really, really nasty things. So, I don't know. I can't really recommend it just because it is a little, it's not like a true giallo where it's a beautiful, like, versatile, like, you know, colors and themes and music. It's more or less, oh, it's a guy killing women with gloves. It's pretty much why it's probably classified as a giallo. Gotcha. I don't really consider it.
The black gloves make it a giallo film.
It doesn't really take any of those elements, per se, of your traditional giallo film to make it one. So it's funny because they also put in quotation marks on the back. So I think Mondo Macabro is also like, maybe? So, anyways, last one, kind of important. I might go on a tangent again. But I watched All American High Revisited. All Ooh. American High originally was a film, a documentary that was made in 1984, released in 86 at Cannes, won a bunch of awards that year at film festivals, and then never heard of again. So a couple years ago, they pulled the film out of the vault, went to the actors or the people that were in the documentary, and found out what they were up to like 30 years later. And it's a beautiful, beautiful, amazing documentary. It's so fucking good. The first hour is the old documentary, and then the last 30 minutes is catching up with these people that they interviewed. But it's mostly focuses on a foreign exchange student that is at the school and her experience, you know, with America, because she's from Finland, dealing just like, you know, with parties, social issues, friends, family, being away from her parents. And then it goes into kind of the focuses on some of the popular kids and parties and everything like that. Just a really charming, like, documentary, just seeing kids being kids back in the day. And whether you grew up in the 70s, 80s, or early 90s, it's that friendship and that, you know, camaraderie is there. And my tangent is I got a little depressed watching it, mainly because there's a lot of sequences with parties and friends. And it made me think, because you're watching these kids and they're drinking beer, they're playing quarters, they're all sitting on a couch with one another talking, they're around the pool area, you know, and there's a few people in the pool, and then there's cups in the pool, and they're all just social mingling, like being social mingling with one another in a big, you know, circle standing around. I'm like, man, these kids today will never fucking have this because we're glued to our fucking phones.
Like, I don't necessarily agree with that.
Yeah, no, that's like, really?
Dude, yeah. I mean, okay, hold on. I have my sink running.
Your sink?
So... Hold on, what was that? I was on my phone. What were we saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sometimes when you guys are talking and I know you're going to talk for a long time, I like clean my house
while I'm podcasting. Behind the scenes.
I have to keep moving or I like get freaked out. Anyway, I graduated high school in 2008, and granted that was, you know, a while ago and things have changed so dramatically, but because of, you know, how young I am, that also means that my family members are a lot younger than, like, you know, Zach is 34 and his siblings are all older than he is. So he has to like watch his nephews. Whereas like I have family members that are in high school right now. And yeah, do they tweet constantly and Instagram everything all the time? Yeah. But they're also still having giant bonfires and, you know, throwing these crazy house parties with all of their friends. They just happen to also be documenting it at the same time, because the idea that we're all just like glued to our phones and never looking up, it's kind of a misconception. Yeah, we're glued to our phones, but we've also gotten so much better at multitasking that I can sit and like live tweet an event while I'm doing something, while enjoying it, while having a memorable experience. But, you know, to somebody who's just looking at my Twitter feed, all they're seeing is like, wow, she must not even be paying attention. She's glued to her phone. It's like, no, I tweeted this, put my phone down, paid attention. I can tweet something else without ever breaking eye contact with the television or with the people that I'm talking to.
I've seen people tweet as I was talking to them, holding eye contact.
Exactly. I do it all the fucking time.
I was like, what the hell? He's like a freaking Twitter ninja.
Right.
Like,
that's
I do
fine.
It all the time. But like, and that's the thing. Like, I, you know,
super talented, but that's not how everybody is, though.
Correct. But I will say this, you know, I graduated high school when cell phones were a staple for everybody. And we all had Facebook and we all had MySpace and we all had, you know, texting and whatever. But I still know that, like, kids today still have, like, no phone talks. Like, we're having a sleepover. This is serious business. No paper trail. No one put their phones away.
And that's great. But, like, what I'm saying is that, for example, there's been two occasions of the past week that I've been out and about with my family. One was last night because I leave for Fantastic Fest next week. So I was like, let's have, like, this, like, awesome big extravaganza family dinner. So we went out. We're sitting there, and across the table was this guy and this girl, and they're probably like in their 20s. And they were like talking, and then he just is done with his food. He pushes his plate to the side while she continues to eat. And then he sits – they're in a booth, and he does that one where he puts his one arm on the table and then the other arm like on the back of the booth and puts his back up against the wall and is on his phone for literally 15 minutes – while she just eats.
Means he's an asshole.
He's just a dick.
I realize that. But then, the other day when we were out, the same thing happened, but it was a family. The fucking kid had his headphones on.
Yeah.
And he had his – was eating his food. He was just like eating it really slow. Had his head down, watching something, playing whatever. The daughter had her phone out. The husband had his phone. And the woman was just eating there, just staring at him. I don't know if she has a problem with that. They might be perfectly happy. But the thing is that it feels to me and looks like to me that there's never going to be that unless your family implements it like we do. And yeah. I said something on Twitter with some other people, like a no phone zone. But it's fine. Yeah, they might go out. The kids might go out to parties. Families will still have fun. They'll talk to one another. I understand that will happen. But it won't happen. Let's see how I should say this. It's just you might miss something. You're going to miss something because
it's obviously going to change and it's going to be different. But the same way that there are the isolated kids that didn't go to the parties, mm-hmm. those are going to be the same kids that sit and fucking text the whole time and do nothing. They're the same people. The people who want to have fun and want to engage with their friends and do things with their friends, they're still going to do it because that side of a personality isn't going to go away.
Yeah,
it does come down to what you said, like with the parents implementing it. Like my parents were like, fuck no. Like if you put a phone on at the table, you're like, I'm going to beat your ass. And they still do that. And I'm a grown ass woman, but if I come home to visit my parents and we're eating or we're talking, my dad will literally just like swat my phone out of my hands and be like, Twitter can chill for 5 seconds.
My parents will do it to me. And I'm guilty of it. Like I'm not like putting myself on like a pedestal saying, I'm so good, I never do this. No, I have done it. And it made me think, like, of all the times I'm hanging out with friends or something, and we're, like, sitting there talking, and I just, for some reason, have to pull out my phone and look to see what was going on. Why do I have to do that?
Yeah.
What's the purpose of me doing that? Like, why? Like when you're with friends, and, you know, I'm not going to say any names, but I was hanging out with some friends not too long ago, and we're sitting there having lunch, and Janice wasn't with me. It's just me and them two. And they both pull out their phones like at the same time and start looking through Instagram when I'm talking. And it's like, like, are you listening?
Maybe you're just that boring.
No, shut up. So, like you can multitask great, but it doesn't feel like it to me.
Well, there's
it does feel kind of shitty. I don't do that when I'm talking.
It's rude, and therefore I'm going to make a point to stop it. Because of that, and we got off the subject of All American High and how great it is, but it just made me sad because yeah, you're right. The kids will still mingle. They'll still have big parties. That's fine. But meeting that like, they might never meet their best friend because they're not forced to talk to a stranger. You talk to the same people day in and day out. When you were younger, you were forced to talk to people at parties that you didn't know because there was like your friends might be playing a game. They might do something. So you're left on the side with, you know, John Doe over here. And you're like, hey, man, what's going on? But no, you don't have to do that anymore. You pull out your phone so you can ignore them on purpose. So it looks like you're busy. So you don't have to have that awkward conversation.
I do that whenever I'm out in public.
But at the same time, that is also slowly shifting into it's like that scene in Superbad where he's like, what, I'm going to sit here and eat dessert by myself like Stephen Glansbury or whatever they point out like the kid by himself. Well, being the kid on their phone at a party is now becoming like, what are you doing, loser? Why are you on your phone? Like, come hang out with us. Like,
that's, I hope becoming that's the case.
Yeah, that's becoming a thing now. You know, I am very involved with like the theater groups around the Cleveland area and we'll all go out to eat or we'll all go out to do whatever. And if somebody's like, if we don't know them, because, like, you get cast in shows all the time with these big groups of people that you don't know from, like, wide ranges of ages from, like, all over, you know, the area that I never would have met. But, like, people make it a point to call them out if they're sitting on their phone. They'll be like, hey, I don't know you. Get off your phone. And, like, that's something that I'm seeing more and more, especially with younger and younger people. So I think, you know, as much as cell phones are cool and, you know, trendy and whatever, it's even the young kids who are, quote unquote, like addicted to it are even noticing like it's not cool to be on your phone all the fucking time.
That's yeah. Cool. I mean, cool. I hope there is a change and that's great. I hope that does happen because it sounds so odd, but this documentary made me think about myself and about how I kind of want to, you know, do, cause it's become such a norm that I don't think it's rude. But then on the outside, like, I start really thinking about it, and it is. You know, when you're with friends, you're with friends. Like, think about it being in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s even. Because, you know, I graduated in 03, but cell phones weren't as prominent and useful and so intricate and, like, were smartphones, really. They were just, you know.
Yeah, it was a little flip phone.
Yeah, it was a flip phone. Like, my first phone was Nokia, and the only thing it did was call and play Snake. You know, I couldn't really, like, look at it. There was not even fucking texting. It was just call.
Oh, I had an iPhone, and it was, like, that's the first iPhone.
Yeah,
I'm a baby. But, I know.
Yeah, you're
but I'm just saying, like, so, difference. Yeah, I had the high school experience with the iPhone, and,
yeah, but also,
know, there
it's,
are plenty,
it's a lot
plenty
different
of
from then.
Right, it is a lot different from them, but at the same time, it's also very, very similar in the same sense that the way that, like, my parents had their high school experience is very different, but at the same time, it's also still very much the same. There's a reason that The Breakfast Club still relates to fucking everybody, because some things just don't change.
No,
just
and that's how, the same thing with this yeah. documentary. The documentary makes you feel like you're a kid again. You realize that a lot of stuff didn't change, but at this point in time, depending on how the young in that generation utilizes their cell phone and does use it or doesn't use it, I think will change the fact of how people interact with one another. Like, it's fun. I'm not condoning, like, you know, social media or anything because I love it. If it wasn't for social media, guess what? Us three wouldn't be talking right now because we wouldn't know each other.
Truth.
You yep. know? Like, I would have never went up to see you guys when I was in Ohio and hung out with you. I would never know Sean. We wouldn't be having this fucking conversation. So, yeah, you know, social media and internet is fucking fantastic, and it's helped everybody out. So I'm never, ever condoning that. It's just utilizing it and maybe looking over to see who you're sitting next to and maybe just say hey, or to a stranger. If you're at the barbershop, fucking say hey. You know, unless they're reading a book. I mean, it's either reading a book or talking to somebody. That was the only things you could do back in the day. You know, or just be a fucking wallflower. But that was cool, too, because then, you know, you look super cool with your foot on the wall. But jumping back to All right. American High, it's really fucking great. It's super charming. And the tagline is awkward, awesome, and totally rad. And that's the best way to define it.
Sweet.
So, pick it up.
Wow. All right.
I
well,
will.
Luckily, I only have one movie to talk about for the segment. I, because I bought the game Destiny, And I've just been playing that on all my free time.
Wow.
But it's awesome. The Taken King update is great.
Is it that good? Because everybody keeps talking about how great it is.
It wasn't that good. It was okay when it first came out. The thing I like about these new video games is you're basically buying the game for the next, say, 5 years of updates. And this is the first game I've seen really integrate that well, because they just released year two, and they made a massive update that fixed a ton of problems. And I started playing it as soon as that update came out, so I never played it before. But it's super fun. You know, you run around shooting aliens and you level your player up. It's super, you know, it's super simple. Whatever. Like, people can get, the thing that that's great about it is people can get as nerdy as they want with it. Like, there's certain people, like, once a week they do a thing called a raid, where there's an area to go to and it's released only one day a week or over the weekend, that level, and you have to play it with your teammates. You can have teams, and they take like 5 to 7 hours to complete the level, which I'm never going to play that. I'm just going to play, shoot some aliens, level my player up, and that's about it. But it's, you know, for a shooter and everything, it's
too time consuming.
I would never do those raids ever in my life. Level at it. What I like, I jump in when the kids are playing, and I'll shoot some aliens for a little bit, and then I'm done.
So that's why people say they play Destiny for like 12 hours on end.
Yes.
That they're not kidding, because they're probably doing that.
Yeah. It can be as nerdy as you want it to be, which is great.
I haven't done that shit since 2005, when I used to play Halo 2 and 3 until, 4 in the morning with our clan, but yeah, I kind of gave up on that.
That's all right. It's a beautiful game. The controls are really, really well thought out, and for what it is, it's simple, but it's fun. It sucked me in, and once Fallout 4 comes out, though, I'm gonna be into that. But anyway, I did watch. You've talked about this movie on the show, because I was feeling all sci-fi because of playing Destiny. The movie is called Infinity, and Brad, you mentioned it a while back, directed by Shane Abbas. So I finally checked it out, and I think that it's about 20 minutes too long, because it starts dragging at the end. But what I like about it is it's kind of a sci-fi calling card for this director, or this writer-director, Shane Abbas. And I think if he can rein some things in, I think he has a good eye for science fiction, and he can really do some great things. But the movie itself, it's okay. It's kind of it plods in some spots, and it doesn't get as interesting as the idea could make it out to be, because the idea about these, how they go into these slipstreams and they kind of beam into places and all this shit went down in this base or wherever, that's all pretty interesting, but it drug a little bit too much for me. But I think it's worth it's on Netflix, I believe, so I think it's worth checking out if you're bored, if you just want to watch something
bored.
Simple. If you're flipping through Netflix
movie.
And want
it's
something,
good movie.
It's well done, and the effects are pretty outstanding for a low budget. It's mostly practical.
That's why I think I even said on that episode, I would love to know the budget of that movie, because it seems like it's $50 million movie, but I bet you it's not very much at all.
I don't think it is. But they get that's what I want to see more from this director. I think that he can really turn in a really good sci-fi flick. But I would give it a soft recommend. If you want something to watch, you want something sci-fi, give it a chance and check it out. There's a lot of good ideas there. Okay, and with that, man, that was a long what's on our doorstep segment.
Let's go.
Some good stuff. Now let's jump into talking about some Astron 6, and especially their newest release, The Editor.
I love them. I love them so very much. It's unhealthy at this point, and I regret nothing.
It's okay. My relationship with Astron 6 started when their movie Manborg came out, because I saw that poster, and I went, holy fucking shit, that looks amazing. I need to see that right away. And the DVD came out, and I watched it, and I was a little underwhelmed by it because I don't think I'd seen enough cheesy 80s sci-fi flicks recently before watching this. So I was kind of let down with it. I didn't really like it at all.
And, you're the worst.
So I judged. I wrongly judged Astron 6 based off of just Manborg, and then I found out that they have a bunch of shorts. Brad, you and I have tons of conversations about Astron 6, and I just got the movie Father's Day, and I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but I'm super stoked to watch it.
Is it going to be a limited edition?
No.
Ooh, you're gonna regret it after you hear the soundtrack.
Well, it's a 2-disc combo pack.
Well, the
limited edition. Yeah, that one was super expensive, and I opted for this, which was kind of expensive.
You're gonna sell it because you're gonna want the soundtrack, because the soundtrack is to die for.
I'm telling you, it's incredible. The editor soundtrack, and I tweeted at them, and we'll see what happens. Because that deserves to be on the soundtrack.
Since you mentioned that, I'll say my story of Astron 6.
Yep.
When I very first heard of Astron 6, I was actually at Fantastic Fest when Manborg was playing. So when I saw the trailer for Manborg, I had no idea who Astron 6 was at this time. So this was like 2011, 2012, I guess, when it played. So I saw the trailer, and I'm like, okay, that looks like something I would dig. It looks like something like from the 80s, blah, 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 whatever. But when I watched it, I actually didn't care for it all that much. And I blame that mostly because I watched – they had that horribly slow murder with an insufficient weapon. They played both shorts before this.
I've seen that one, actually.
Manborg's only, 59 minutes or something. So they played both of those shorts, and I was so pissed off at those shorts, like, I really wanted to just fucking leave. And my buddy was like, no, don't go, don't go, don't go. And I'm like, no, I'm really, like, if I have to see another fucking Star Wars parody, I'm going to fucking kill myself. So it left a bad taste in my mouth, and it was a midnight movie, and it's already, like, an hour in. They're interviewing the people from the short film, and I'm like, oh, my God, can we just fucking watch Manborg? So I'm already in a bad mood. And after it plays, I'm like, okay, whatever. So then the next day, I have some downtime, and my buddy, I said something like Manborg was a little underwhelming for me, but I do want to give it another shot. My buddy was like, hey, watch Laser Ghost 2, Return of Laser Cove. So I pulled it up on YouTube, and I watched it, and I'm like, oh, my God. Like, did I miss something? I really did. And so later on, I bought their DVD, got all their shorts. I revisited Manborg, loved it, loved BioCop. Huge fan of Father's Day. Father's Day was in my top 10 of 2012 or 13 or whenever I saw it. And I was always championing them. I supported them through and through for their Kickstarters, even their Indiegogo, or not Kickstarters, but their Indiegogos they had. They had an Indiegogo for Fireman. For Christ's sakes. And I tweeted every 5 seconds. I'm sure I got on people's nerves because I wanted Fireman to happen. And then, of course, it didn't happen. So the money went to that, went to the editor, and now we have that. So that was kind of my history of Astron 6. But ever since I watched Laser Ghost Return to Laser Cove, that's when I got hooked. So anyways.
My connection to Astron 6 is entirely different.
Entirely sexual.
A little, kind of, but no. So it was like, I think 2011, and I was at Cinema Wasteland, and there was this poster on the floor with, this hot brunette woman with her showing up the underboob and dude in the eye patch, pointing a gun to the sky. And I was like, holy shit. I don't know what this is. I don't care what this is, but I need it in my life. And it was an ad that Troma was putting out for Father's Day, like coming soon kind of thing. And I was like, I don't know what this is, but I need it. So I went over to the table and I was like, hey, I don't know what kind of pre-order bullshit I need to get on, but I really, really want to watch this movie. And they're like, well, we had some Blu-ray. we don't have any right now. It's not a pre-order. This is just the only poster we had. Because the whole Astron 6 Troma situation is, that's enough for its own episode. But they didn't have any, but they're like, but we have these shorts, like this compilation of shorts. And I was like, yeah, just give it to me. Like, whatever they've got, fucking give it to me. So I took the shorts and I went into the hotel room, like, super drunk and watched all of them. And I fucking lost it. I was like, this is some of the funniest shit ever. Everybody talks about Cool Guys being super great, but, like, Punch Out fucking killed me.
Yeah,
like, the guy
Punch
who,
Out's great.
Like, the, for those who know, Punch Out's about a guy who discovers that he's, like, sexually aroused by getting punched in the face. And it's, like, set in, like, a 1980s, like, comedy. It's so funny. And I was like, these guys write the kind of movies that I like to watch. Like, they're really funny. Finally got my hands on Father's Day. I thought it was brilliant. I fell fucking head over heels in love with Adam Brooks. I am so in love with him. It's, oh, God. Like, he is, like, Christopher Sarandon 2.0 for me. I am just so, I can't handle it. I'm so enamored with him. And everyone else is always like, oh, like, Matthew Kennedy and Connor Sweeney are so hot. And I'm like, no, man, Adam Brooks is where it's at. Oh, old man with a mustache. God, kills me. So I was like, you know what? I like these guys. I'm going to follow everything that they do. So then Manborg came out and I watched it and I love the DIY spirit. Like, DIY or die is my, like, one of my favorite things. Like, people who are like, you know what? We don't have any money, but we want to make movies. Fuck it. We're making it. I have nothing but the utmost respect for them. So I watched Manborg and I was just like, you know, this is so much fun. This is incredible. And then you watch the credits and you're like, these fucking guys do everything. Everything. Yeah. Like, Stephen Kostanski, like, is that goddamn movie. And then obviously BioCop comes after it and it's one of the most hysterical things I've ever watched.
Why am I still alive?
I use that as like a reaction gif all the time. Whenever I don't feel good or something, I'll just post like current mood and it's like a picture of BioCop with a gun in his mouth. So I loved them. And then, you know, they did their Kickstarter for The Editor. And just the images that I saw alone, I was like, I will give them any amount of money that they want. And I donated, I don't know how much I donated, but I donated to them. And, oh God, it's so fucking brilliant. Like, they are such underrated masterminds. And as much as I want to say, like, give them all the money in the world so they can make whatever they want, at the same time, I'm like, don't. Because they make better shit with $5,000 than some people do with $1 million.
You okay, Brad?
No, I'm just, why am I still alive? But no, yeah, it's for a little bit of history of people don't know anything too much or don't know enough or don't know at all. Astron 6 is a comedy team of five guys and originally started as they were two different groups in competition. Matt and Connor had Great Point Films that worked with and Adam Brooks, and then there was Jeremy Gillespie and Steve Kostanski that were on another team, and they would do like short film competitions. And eventually, they realized that they would be a lot better if they just all joined forces, because each one has a unique power. We'll just say that it's like they're superheroes.
Almost,
they are. They're like the fucking Planeteers. And their forces combined makes Astron 6 Captain Planet.
No, it is, because they have such depth in different things. Steve's the makeup guy. Jeremy's the music guy. Adam is kind of the lead actor. Connor and Matt are kind of a really good just writing team. But Connor's a lot of fun, too. Like, all three, like, mostly just the three of them act, Adam, Connor, and Matt. And the other guys are behind the scenes. But they just work the blend, and they work just so well together that it just makes you think that they are actually making throwback movies without winking at the camera, but they're making really hardcore throwback.
Yeah.
Like, to the point of where it's almost like, it's almost a wink, but they're doing things that are not very, like, thing is, it's like, oh, we have a Nightmare on Elm Street reference. We have a, you know, Friday the 13th. Look at me. I like horror films. I put this in my movie. No, they're doing shit that you would never even fathom. Like, fucking Editor has Giallo homages, unless you're a hardcore Giallo enthusiast, you're not going to get half the shit they're doing, but you don't have to understand the goddamn movie. That's the beauty of it.
Right.
Like, they're making something for everybody. They're like, oh, we understand that not everybody's going to understand this Murder Rock reference, because probably most of the people that are watching this haven't seen Murder Rock, or if they have, they're not going to remember this.
I think it's my favorite reference in the movie, actually.
So, but anyways, it's just such a great blend of talent that and watching them from their shorts to doing something as powerful as, you know, the editor from the time that when they started with like off their short disc, I'll pick, you know, probably like Cool Guys or Punch Out, going from Cool Guys to Punch Out all the way to the editor. It's just a beautiful, just this escalation of just them getting their shit together and being even better than the last time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of their overall goal, is like, we have to top ourselves. Cause with the Father's Day, I still like Father's Day more than the editor, but they really outdid themselves with acting, with special effects, with music, with storyline, with kind of the comedy. I liked Father's Day more or less because it was just really brutal and funny. The editor was kind of like, they were almost trying to make a serious film at times.
Oh, yeah.
And that's I really liked about it. Like, it dropped comedy for like 15 minutes sometimes.
Yeah.
Where it wasn't being funny, or they weren't trying to catch a laugh. They were just legitimately making like a decent movie, and I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
Well, that's what's great about the editor is, and we talked about this last time with horror comedies and everything with student bodies, like, the editor becomes an entry into the kind of an entry into the giallo genre. I mean, yeah, there's the winks, there's comedy there, but no more comedy than you would find in rewatching an old giallo from the 80s. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
They referenced it so well that it fits, and they're not winking at the camera, you know, waving their arms around, just saying, you know, look at the joke I just made. It was, I don't know, the moments are so, like, they work so well, and it's so integrated into the script and into the story. And that's the thing too, like, with the editor, I was totally wrapped up in the story, like, what's going on, like, it's a mystery. Like, I was generally interested in finding out the answer to the mystery about who the killer was and everything. And I don't know, it is shot so well. The music is on point. It's just, they really went out of their way to make it stand on its own as a film, you know, with some comedic leanings, but, you know, it's they didn't have to try that hard, but they did. And that's, I think, really what elevated this and really made me want to give Astron 6 even more of an enthusiastic revisit. And finally get Father's Day and, you know, and get to their shorts and stuff like that. It kind of jump-started my interest in them, because I've known about them for a while, but I haven't been super stoked about them. I've just known that they exist. But the editor really, just because showing the growth, really showed that these guys, they're interested in genre films. And I also, the way the attention to detail they put into all their posters too, the poster art, because I love poster art and painted poster art, and the poster for the editor is fantastic.
It's the gorgeous.
The girl draped across the table, not just because there's a half naked woman draped across the table, but you get the giallo feel. On their website, they actually have another one that looks even more like an Italian giallo. That one's awesome.
Yeah, there's
the two gloves.
There's a couple of them, and they're all unfucking believably gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, even the Manborg poster is beautiful. And the Father's Day artwork is great. There's just all those little things that they're making sure are fucking awesome. Like, they do, down to the little minute detail. And even, Brad, with what you're saying about all the references in the editor, I'm not going to get them all, but I got some of the obvious ones. I got the Murder Rock one, which is the that's the little exercise routine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. But you know,
I still think their homage to the Wooden Fingers is the homage to the Wooden Dildo and the Sisters of Ursula,
huh?
Which I think is hilarious.
Like, oh yeah.
Black Belly of the Tarantula, there's a reference of that. I mean, it's just on and on and on. I mean, I think they just love the genre and just, like, you know, just throw little things in there for the audience. But yeah, there's quite a few. I mean, you'd spend a whole fucking show just talking about the influences and everything. But
I mean, the Beyond one is obvious.
I mean, there's a lot of subtle ones. Like, yeah. Like the reason right. why, like, the wooden fingers. Like, why the fuck would you have wooden fingers? But there's a wooden dildo scene in The Sister of Ursula that's really brutal. And I just, so it was immediately what I thought of when I saw wooden fingers. I was like, oh, wooden dildo. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. So, but anyways.
I also want to say that their attempt to get as much male nudity as possible into the film has to be respected.
It's so appreciated. Nudity,
but,
well, here's the thing is that Matt and Connor love to fucking kiss one another. Like, in the trailer for Fireman, they really fucking go at it, and it is fucking hysterical. Like, I think in probably half of their shorts, Connor and Matt make out at least once. So, their lips have been on each other's lips quite a few times.
You start some rumors. But the scene, is it in, like, the locker room or the bathroom or whatever? He just shows up just totally naked.
Oh,
like it's no big deal.
It was pretty amazing.
I love that scene.
The thing that I love the most about them is the respect that they have for not only each other, but also, I guess, kind of the integrity of what they're doing. Like, there really isn't anything that's off limits, and they treat everything with the same amount of respect. Like, so yeah, male nudity is something that isn't really seen in films very often, but they treat it as if you would treat any other nude scene. It's right. not this big winking gag. It's right. just like, yep, and now we're naked.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like a Will Ferrell movie where all of a sudden there's a gigantic penis over someone's shoulder.
Right, exactly. It's not meant to be like a, hey, look at this dick. Like, it's not, they're not doing that. They're just like, and penis. And you're like, oh, okay, cool, got it.
Well, they're both naked, so yeah, you're going to see peen right there.
Yep, and I am very pleased with it because I know, obviously, like, the one is the prosthetic, and it's, that's really funny. But the best part is that it's, like, never really acknowledged. That's what makes it so much better. but yeah, like I do appreciate seeing that as a female fan because I don't get it. I never fucking get it. I can name 100 movies where tits are shown, but I can name like 7 where there are dicks, and that's pushing it. I probably can't even name 7. So I don't know. I think that it's awesome.
I think my without doing spoilers, my favorite is a cigarette burn.
Oh my god, yeah. Oh, yeah. I cackled like an evil laughed. Witch.
I was in tears. I was laughing so hard. Like, something just as small as that got me so bad. Like, I couldn't fucking take it. But, yeah, just an all-around, just great, great group of guys and really nice on the outside. They're always welcoming to their fans.
Mm-hmm.
And for those that are really into this, we have The Void coming out next year, which is a serious attempt
I can't
from
wait.
Them.
Ooh.
Which is mostly Steve Kanansky and Jeremy Gillespie's thing together, but that thing looks intense as fuck. Like, my heart is racing during... I've watched that promotional trailer for that probably 100 times. I donated a fuck ton of money to that thing. I want to see these guys be extremely successful. And you know how you said give them more money? I kind of want to see what they would do, though, because I really think it would still be do-it-yourself. I'm not saying give them $50 million, but I would like to see them with a $1 million budget to see how far they can go. Because, I mean, we have Father's Day. They made half of Father's Day. They made a trailer for $5,000. And then Troma gave the other $5,000 for them to complete the film. And that's what we got. We got a film shot on Canon 7D over a period of probably 2 years of something as funny and as brutal as that. You know, Manborg was filmed in Steve's fucking garage.
Yeah, that thing's super
it's
low
insane.
It was filmed in his fucking garage over a few years. And, like, W for Wish and ABCs of Death 2, another thing that's very much like Manborg, that's just filmed in, you know, just in a fucking corner. Like, what the fuck? I mean, obviously the editor was more money, bigger budget, more locations, so you got to see him do that. But I'd really like, with The Void, like, they filmed most of the movie already on nothing. They did a Kickstarter for it, for the monsters, because, you know, like, Steve's a big practical effects guy, mm-hmm. which you can watch, you know, the editor, and you can see Manborg, and of course Father's Day. All the special effects look rad. Yeah. And he's a Hollywood guy. Steve does Hollywood makeup. He's done stuff for Resident Evil films. He did, like, you know, the stuff for Nurse 3D. He's worked a lot into big budget films. And seeing him going to do something like The Void and Jeremy have the music behind it, I don't know how involved the other guys are with it. I'm sure they'll show up. But goddamn, 2016, we're going to go fucking hell. And we're not going to want to come back. That's all I'm saying.
Nice.
That's like my most anticipated movie of all time right now. That's all I want to see.
Super excited about it.
Anyways.
So the big thing I wanted to mention too about this was, like, I already mentioned how I love the score. And I believe they sourced about 10% of it. Did they source some goblin music or some music from Claudio Simonetti? They told me on Twitter 90% of it is original.
Yeah. Jeremy Gillespie did most of the soundtrack, but there's a few songs in there. Like, they have Carpenter Brut. He has a song in there that's playing during the Murder Rock sequence. I think they have some Claudio Simonetti stuff. But yeah, most of the stuff is from Jeremy himself.
Awesome.
Well, the other thing.
Go ahead.
I would say, like, the other thing though that is so on point in, I guess, all of their filmography, but especially in the editor, is also their art design, which I think goes kind of hand in hand with music. Like, you can have the best score in the world, but if your shit doesn't look appropriate, then like, having that specific style of music also isn't going to work. So you combine this incredible soundtrack that feels very much, you know, of the era that they're trying to emulate, but then you also get, like, your set design and your costumes and all of that, and it's perfect.
And the cinematography, like, too, man, is just
so and good. I know
the colors they use.
I know Adam Brooks he's a painter and he's an artist, so I think
to his website. He has some awesome paintings.
Oh yeah, his shit's amazing. So I think you have kind of that working with the film, and it just gives it, like, this whole, like, it breathes this whole new life into it, because it's just so, like, you really can't see anything wrong with it. Like, you look around and nothing about that film looks like it's out of place. It looks exactly the way it should.
Yeah.
Well, that's the same thing with, like, Matt, and because Matt is you know, one of the DPs, you know, for them, because him and Adam work together. But, you know, even with Matt, his background with film and communications is very, very high. You know, I think he just graduated his master's or something not too long ago, I think he was talking about. So, yeah, just a really, really fucking smart and talented group of guys. And I think the one thing, it'll take them a little bit longer to get recognized because of the comedy, but I hope that people just don't say, oh, they're comedians, so they quickly disregard it.
Yeah.
Because that's how I am with movies. Like, when there's a comedy, it's a comedy. I don't look at it as a film. It's, you know, like fucking Anchorman. I don't think there's any beauty to Anchorman, whether it's shots, editing, or anything. I just think it's just a bunch of fucking people improvising. So it's easy to discredit that, which I shouldn't, because now I'm being hypocritical. Being that, you know, with something like this, you need to really focus on the movie as a whole.
Yeah.
Because even though it's funny and kind of silly sometimes, don't discredit it, because the guys are really fucking talented. They know what they're doing.
Well, they treat the genre that they're spoofing with respect, you know, as a...
Yeah,
they're not making fun of it,
exactly.
They're laughing with it.
Yeah. You know, because you got to think at the time that these movies were made, the filmmakers aren't, you know, throwing crazy shit in there and laughing and giggling, being like, ha, 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 look at this. No, they're really fucking serious. And you don't have kind of that when they do poke fun at something, it's something like cigarette burns.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where it's like, hey, let's do this sequence. I think this would be funny. And I thoroughly enjoy it. So, yeah. Pick up all their shit and do like an Astron 6, like, marathon with, like, their shorts in between. Like, cool guys, punch out, HIZ, laser ghosts. Inferno of the Dead is fucking hysterical. Where basically these fucking zombies follow them around. And then if you're really into this shit, go to graypointfilms.com and watch Connor and Adam and Matt's shorts before they met Jeremy Gillespie and Steve Costanzi, because they have this one called Adam the Cowboy that is, I think BJ would love, because he plays a gay cowboy.
It's cute that you think that I haven't seen this. my fangirl obsession mistake. Knows no bounds.
That's awesome. I need to mention a couple more things about this film. Tristan Risk basically opens the film.
Yes, she does.
And it is incredible. I mean, I want her to open up every one of the films I watch.
Whoa.
You want? Well, I thought
that came out a little bit wrong. That came out
bit
more than I intended for it to come out. But she's
in our Slumber Party Massacre episode. She's on it.
Yeah, she's awesome, and
so awesome she recorded with us twice because Sean fucked up the first time.
No, dude, the file got corrupted, man.
You fucked up.
No, I didn't.
You fucked up
the computer. Anyway, but I guess what I don't know if it was an interview or what, but I guess they were set to record to film her for that segment, and then they found out that she also did fire breathing. Or whatever, so they incorporated that into the act, kind of a spur of the moment. But she's great. Her scenes are really good in it, and we need to see her in more films for sure. I wanted to mention a little more about Adam Brooks, because he is just perfect as the editor. You know, he feels like he walked from a late 1970s film onto set, because he looks the part. He's just really great in that role as the editor, and he totally sells it.
Tell that they have a great respect for that genre of film, because he really does just emulate everything about that kind of era. They honestly all did. And like, you've seen them kind of change their images for, you know, whatever scene that they're in. And I love that they all allow themselves to fully commit and transform into whatever they're doing. Yeah. It never feels like Adam Brooks as blah-de blah-de blah or Connor Sweeney as blah-de blah-de blah. Like, they feel very much really, really just dedicated to these characters, regardless if it's the editor or Manborg or whatever, or if it's just some short film that they made. They're all never half-assing it.
Yeah. Yep. The Blu-ray is released by Scream Factory.
We didn't even mention that.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And it has some pretty good extras on there. The audio commentary, which I started but have not finished, is hysterical. It is one of the best audio commentaries so far that I've heard in a long time. I love their candor on it, and they're just freaking goddamn funny. There's also a documentary on there which I need to watch. Have you guys seen any of the special features on these?
Yeah.
How long is that documentary? Is it feature length, or is it kind of like half hour or something?
What, on the editor?
Yeah.
Is it like 50? I want to say it's like 50 minutes, okay. 55 minutes?
Yeah, it's
it might be longer
than
that.
It's not long enough to, I wouldn't say that it's long enough to constitute a feature. Yeah. But it's not, you know, like a throwaway. Like, you got to sit down and, you know, make some time for it. It's the documentary for Father's Day is also
nice,
pretty fucking natch. So
okay, cool. I mean, I love it when filmmakers come in and they're like, no, we're going to do a fucking behind-the-scenes documentary, and it's going to be awesome. You know, the guys that did, The Battery. The Battery is one thing I think of with that, so... Yeah, the one on the editor is called Making Movies Used to Be Fun. I saw that title and I was like, I can't wait to watch that.
Yeah.
So, cool.
The funny thing about Father's Day is that after the editor's done with, they're going to be releasing the documentary about Father's Day. Because they have this documentary called never give up or never, not that's something from Toy Story, but it's no retreat, no surrender, something like that.
Yes. And
it's
no retreat, no surrender.
Yeah. It's going to kind of exploit what happened with them and trauma, because for those, when we say trauma, Father's Day is not a trauma film. It was the only reason there's trauma stuff in it and Lloyd's in it is because he gave them $5,000 to actually make the rest of the feature. So they put the like Traumaville High School stuff like in, but it's not traditionally a trauma film. I want that to, this is their normal stuff. It just has that type of shit in it. But, long story short, trauma kind of fucked them over hardcore. And so they videotaped.
It's no sleep, no surrender. We were thinking of a Bruce Lee movie. Sorry. I like was sitting there. I was like, wait, that's not right, but that is something. Yeah, that's a no retreat, no surrender. It's a Bruce Lee movie. It's no sleep, no surrender. We're stupid.
Because Lloyd actually throws a couple punches in the Blu-ray when you put it in. Because he talks about how they didn't have this documentary done in time, so it's not included. Like, there's no reason for him to say it, but he purposely says that. Originally, this was going to be a 4-disc, and Troma was like, no, we're just going to do a one-disc standalone. And there was a complete fucking outrage of Astron 6 fans. I was fucking big proponent of that, because I don't like Troma. And I was like, you know, you stupid fucking assholes, you need to do what you said, because this is a movie that's going to be like huge for them, and this is, they need this credit and they deserve it, and they need this huge fucking Blu-ray that you promised with the soundtrack, the 2-disc set, you know, with the DVD. It's 4 discs, I think, on let me pick it up.
What's crazy too is that because like obviously No Sleep, No Surrender, like all we've really been able to see are like clips and things released in the trailer, and there was a couple of clips that were released that then like were pulled away, which is why like I'm super fucking excited for it. Lloyd Kaufman was on an episode of the Movie Crypt with Adam Green and Joe Lynch, and they'll take like viewer questions. And somebody asked about Astron 6, and Adam and Joe clearly had no idea anything about the situation. So they asked the question live on air, and you know what? You would think that Lloyd Kaufman was running for Miss America, because that motherfucker answered a question without ever answering the question. So you know that some shady shit went down, and you know, obviously the documentary for Father's Day, we've only seen clips that were available, but then have since been taken down, and the trailer. Which is why, you know, I stated earlier that I thought it was pretty natch, because like, I can't fucking wait for it, because it's going to come out and you know that it's going to be pretty all, you know, truthful and all telling. But yeah, after hearing Lloyd's answer to it on the Movie Crypt, I was like, all right, some real serious shit went down, because he would not budge on it in one way or the other. So
interesting.
Yeah, this is long story short, this is what happened. So they made Father's Day. If anybody knows anything about Troma, they are basically went bankrupt a few years ago. So they had Father's Day. They bootlegged it, Troma did, and sold it at conventions on a blank disc. Sold it for money, making money themselves, but not giving anything to the filmmakers.
Wow.
That's what happened. And it got posted online. It got you know, torrented like fucking crazy, because there is no way to actually see this movie, because there is nothing coming out of it, because they were just bootlegging it. And they sold just fucking blank, you know, just discs that said Father's Day on it. And they got, I'd be super pissed too, because you know, that's could have been something for you that could have went towards, you know. You know, a 4-disc beautiful Blu-ray, Limitation 5000, which they eventually did. Troma came through in the end, but it really shows, if you're a filmmaker, never, ever, ever work with Troma. Did I ever tell you the did I tell the Marcus story? Because I
yeah. Marcus. Well, I've heard it.
about the charred tards.
Yeah, I don't know if you've...
Did I tell that on the show?
On air.
So, long story short, this is another trauma thing, just to solidify that they're bastards. So, Marcus, special effects artist, worked on We Are Still Here. Great special effects artist, worked on many movies, 100 Tears, all this shit. American Guinea Pig, all that bullshit. So anyways, one of his first jobs in quote-unquote Hollywood was for a trauma film. It was like Toxic Avenger, like 4 or something like that. So he like had to make, like, they blew up these retards or something. That's what they call them, and I'm not using that as a derogatory term. This, you know, this retards, they blew them up, and it's called charred tards. And they had us, like, you know, like just bits of matter and stuff like that. So Marcus did this job, and he, you know, emailed the guy that was supposed to get paid. He's like, hey, you know, I did the, you know, charred tards for you, and he pay me. And he's like, oh, you know, so and so, blah, 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 blah. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. Marcus never saw any money. So, a couple years later, he met Lloyd, and he was like, hey, you know, just to let you know, I actually did this for your movie, and I never got paid. And he's like, oh, who were you dealing with? And he told him the name. He's like, oh, yeah, we fired him. And he's like, well, I still never got paid. And he's like, oh, yeah, we do that all the time. And Marcus is like, what? And he's like, yeah, we don't pay people half the time for their work. And just, like, said it like it was just normal.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I was an unpaid extra once. I was supposed to get $100, and I was an extra in a film, and I never got paid.
Whoa, what? Pompeii?
Pompeii. That was years ago. Pompeii's too new.
Oh.
I was in a club scene. I was dancing my ass off.
Whoa. I
didn't get paid nothing.
You look like you'd be the glow stick raver, dude.
They probably didn't pay me because they're like, who the hell is that long haired guy with the tight jeans pants on, the tight jeans on, and the tight t-shirt? Because I was, you know, the big old sideburns.
I bet you look sexy.
I think I did.
I bet you look like shit.
Whoa.
Thank you.
I'm kidding.
Thank you for bringing me back.
I'm kidding.
Hey, we all need that humbling, you know, to be humbled every now and then. So cool. I mean, I'm so glad that I saw The Editor. It really, it was like, I knew that it was good. It was getting a lot of praise, but I was kind of thinking that I would be set up for disappointment. And, I'm really glad that I saw it. I mean, I woke up early in the morning just to watch it, and it like made my whole day better, because I was just thinking about the movie the rest of the day and laughing about it. But I would definitely, highly recommend it. So everyone should grab this.
It's pretty great.
For sure. Well, we have two other sections to get to, but we are running out of time. So I'm thinking what we should do. We went on a few rants today, and we, slathered all over Astron 6. So
I'm not even sorry about it.
Hey, it's okay. I think I'm totally happy with everything we've talked about. So I think what we should do is just the two segments we were going to do, we'll push them off until next week. So we'll have those segments then. And also next week, be prepared. We will be doing, my voice just cracked like a teenager. We will be doing another chance for you to win some Coffee Shop of Horrors coffee.
And I have a Blu-ray.
Do you? Okay, awesome. This is going to be a big package, people. A big package, just like, what's his name in the editor? the blonde guy. Six.
Connor Sweeney.
Six packages of coffee to give away, plus a fucking Blu-ray. So we're gonna think of something really fun and creative for all of you to submit, because we love hearing from you.
Submit.
And this should be fun. So keep that on your radar. And let's see. Oh, shit. A lot more big stuff going on. We are going to start.
We're expanding the Screencast family.
Yes, we're going to expand the site. We got a handful of writers.
Staff writers.
And our first one, you're hearing this on Tuesday. Our first one posted on Monday about The Beyond by Josh Obershaw.
I'm going to. You might want to know the staff members.
You might want to know how to read, too.
I know.
But that's a problem we've established.
Josh Obershaw. Well, his last name is actually very easy to say. I just all of a sudden got too self-conscious about pronouncing it wrong and fucked up.
It came out your mouth wrong.
But Brad, you actually rounded up our staff writer, so I'm going to turn this over to you, and I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, well, it was just that we you know, we have the podcast, and our site does fairly well just with the podcast, but I've always been really, really big on articles.
Yeah.
I love, you know, that are actually well-written and well-rounded and, you know, whether a retrospective, a perspective, whatever it may be, I'm just always a fan of it, and I've always kind of wanted to do that for our site. So I reached out to a few people, and we have roughly about 4 or 5 people that will be doing this for us. Personally, we're not going to do it because this show takes up most of our time. So we're actually going to be posting stuff almost to the point, not right now, mm-hmm. but to the point almost daily.
Yeah, that's the hope, yeah.
Yeah, with articles and different things. So, yeah, thanks to the people that said yes, and we're expanding the family and making this better and badder. and hopefully people dig it. Because, you know, we can only do so much on 1.5 to 2 hours on a show every week. So this will give us more time to put in also other people's perspectives, because, I mean, just because what we say isn't what goes. I mean, we could be saying everything wrong. Yeah, I know I do.
I think it's going to offer a new perspective to the site as a whole. And then I think even our conversations, because they're going to be in our collective, brains as we're talking about things and everything. So I'm excited. I'll throw stuff up every now and then, little news things and everything. The news stuff is, for me, I don't give a shit. It's copy and paste bullshit. Reviews, like, there's so many review sites out there.
Yeah, we're not doing reviews.
That I was just like, you know, these I've tried writing a few reviews on my own, and Brad's posted, one or two on the site. And, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, they're not my thing, and I like doing the podcast, but I'm not a writer, you know, necessarily. And reviews for me just aren't my thing. But Brad brought this up about articles. And I think that, you know, one or two articles a day is enough for the site, because I want these to be kind of, you know, big chunks of somebody's, you know, I want these to be well thought out, not just bullshit little reviews and blah, you know, blurbs about stuff or, you know, clickbait stuff. I don't want any of that stuff on the site. So I think this is the best fit, I think, for what we're trying to do. Because we're all about just bringing up insightful conversation. Insightful, smart, somewhat dumb conversations about flicks, right? I mean, that's a...
Yeah, I mean, I hope we have something funny.
Yeah, I'm into it.
And I'll be serious.
So, you know, every now and then if I get inspired, I might post something. Brad, I'm sure, will post some stuff. And BJ, I'm sure if... you know, if she wants to, she's totally welcome to write stuff for the site as well.
If I ever have time to
write. Right, because she's already, you know, doing a bunch of other shit. So, but, you know, but I think this is great. I'm really excited about it. And as we start getting more submissions from our staff writers, we'll let you guys, you'll start meeting them via the site and through Twitter and stuff like that. So, huge thank you to them. I'm excited to see what's going to happen with that. Want to give a shout out to oneofus.net for posting the show. Thanks for putting up with our absence, guys. So listen to all their other shows, and then nerdly.co.uk. They're still posting our site there. So we really appreciate the giving us some visibility overseas. And of course, all our sponsors, coffeeshopofhorrors.com, Grindhouse. Shit, what's his
Grindhouse what's his video?
Website? Yeah, grindhousevideo.com. And
oh my god,
sorry, gosh,
Know how to read, Brad.
I don't have anything up right now, that's the problem. I have nothing in front of my face right now, I'm just trying to remember. Hold on 1 second.
You know, one thing we didn't do to interrupt you brutally, is we talked about it through text messages ourselves, but we never mentioned on the show about the guy who got fired for listening to our show.
Oh, shit. Holy shit,
we got somebody fired.
Yeah, we did.
He emailed us, right? Holy fuck. Hold on, we're going to derail the show.
Emailed.
We got time.
I'm going to read this. Note to pause it.
No, who gives a shit? We're doing this right now as we're going. Here we go. Chris Richardson. Chris, first of all, thank you so much for listening to the show.
You're
going to
read this? Oh god.
I'm reading this. We're going to read this, and then we will call it a day. All right, Chris writes, "Hello all. I had an office-based job, and one of the things that made the boring days more bearable was that I would always listen to your podcast at my desk while at lunch. I would download the files from your website as it made it easier for me to pick up where I left off the next day. One day, I was pulled into a meeting and presented with pages of results that had been picked up from the virus checker on my PC. Highlighted were all the Screamcast podcasts. I was asked to explain what they were, as I would rename the files with whatever films you guys were discussing. My first thought, it may have been something to do with the names. Necromantic, Slumber Party Massacre, Scary Afros and Scary Guns, that's what did it, etc. I figured that it might sound like I was planning a homicidal attack on the corpse of a cheerleader while dressed as a sweet sweetback. So I explained that these were podcasts discussing horror movies. The meeting ended and I thought that was it. A few weeks later, I was invited for another meeting. This time, it was to discuss the fact that I had threatened the work network by having MP3 files on my computer. I explained an MP3 is just a file format and that it would be very improbable that this could cause a security risk. Again, I thought that was the end of it. Cue the final meeting where I was told that MP3 files breached copyright infringement and that they were pushing for gross misconduct. I thought about fighting my corner, but decided I couldn't work for a company that would treat me in such a way. A few days later, I applied for and was successful in getting a far better job. The moral of the story, listen to the Screamcast and good things will surely happen to you. Once again, thank you for all your hard work and keeping us all entertained and financially broke, Chris. Thanks, Chris. That so email good. Is awesome.
So good.
Yeah. So funny.
Man, at first I was like, when he first said he was on Twitter, so he was like, you know, yeah, you guys got me fired. And I was like, well, you got to email us a story. But my first thought was like, maybe, you know, me and Brad were talking about something very inappropriate and maybe it was coming out of speakers, you know, on his computer and some.
Yeah.
It's probably dicks. We talk about dicks
totally.
A lot.
Totally. Dicks and everything.
Dicks and tits and dicks and tits.
Yep.
Dick and titters.
Although, yeah, that wouldn't get me fired from my job because all the people that I work with talk about that more than me around everyone else. Which I'm not saying is right, but goddamn.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway, so drop if you guys have stories about Screamcast, drop us a line. readme@thescreamcast.com is the email, or you can use the contact form on our website or on Twitter, scream_cast. And if your story is awesome, we will read it. But that's going to do it for this week's show. Do you guys have anything else to say, you two?
Fuck you, Sean.
Okay, thank you very much.
I love you both. You're so pretty.
Mm-hmm. All of you have a great week. We'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.